In today's Mishnah, we're in the first and second Mishnah from the second Perek of Masechet Arachin, and the Mishnah begins. Ein barachin pachot misela. So we've explained that when it comes to Arachin, if someone says, I want to give the Erech vow of a, I mean, he makes an Erech vow to give the Erech of a particular individual, that the Torah provides the actual fixed value that he has to that the person has to contribute to the Beis HaMikdash based on the age and gender of the subject of the Erech vow. However, the Torah says, "V'imachu merakecha," that if the person cannot pay, and he's placed before the Kohen, and the Kohen works out exactly how much the person can pay. There's going to be a debate exactly how that's worked out, but the point is, if the person who makes this erech vow cannot afford the sum that the Torah says, the Mishnah says that he will pay no less than a seller. Now that's less than the smallest erech value. The smallest erech value is actually shalosh slaim, three seller. And that's for a bat chodesh, for a girl who's from a month until 5 years. That since the Torah says, "Kol erech chayyeh b'shekel hakodesh," that all your erechin will be with this shekel hakodesh. And we mentioned this in the previous masechta. That's a selah tzuri, that particular coin. We understand there's no less than a shekel. And the Mishnah says, "V'lo yater al chamishim selah," and there's no more than 50 selah, because that's the highest erech that the Torah lists, and that is for a male between the ages of 20 and 60 years old. So the Mishnah says, Ketzad, how so? If a person is considered very poor, and the Kohen says, no, you have to pay a seller. So if Natan Seller, he pays a seller by Hashir and then hits a jackpot, then in Onten Klum, he doesn't have to pay any more, despite the fact he's now could afford far more, because he's already fulfilled his obligation that he put upon himself when he made this Erech vow. However, if he only gave less than a seller, which is less than the minimum amount, as the Mishnah says, Pachot Misela, Ve'eshir, and then he inherited lots of money or won a lot of money, the Mishnah says, Noten Chamishim Seller, then he would have to pay the full amount that he stipulated when he made this Erech vow. That is because he had not yet discharged himself the obligation of the Erech vow when he gave less than a seller. Mishnah then continues, Haya be'adav chamesh slaim. What if an individual took upon himself to give the full, 50 slaim, but he only had in his hand 5 slaim? Rabbi Meir says, Einu noten ela achat, he only has to pay the minimum. However, Chachamim disagree. Chachamim say, noten et kulam. He has to pay everything he has up until, obviously, the amount he stipulated. In this situation, he has to pay this full 5 slaim in his hand. Mishnah then continues by repeating, "Ein ba'arachin pachot misela v'yoter ala chamishim sela," that in arachin you pay no less than a sela and you pay no more than 50. Why is the Mishnah repeating itself? Mishnah is now really asserting the opinion of Chachamim that if he can't afford the amount, he has to pay as much as he can. That's why we have a range for someone who cannot pay, which is between a sela all the way up to 50 sela. Now, having mentioned this, Ein pachot or ein yater, meaning there's no less and no more. Now, the next few Mishnah, we're going to learn about other halachas that also have a range. Now, this first one is as follows. It says, Ein petach ha-to'e pachot mishiva v'lo yater al shiva asar. Now, to appreciate this, it really touches on the laws of Nida. And we haven't yet learned Masechta Nida, so I'm going to try and give you a brief introduction. Please don't get confused with the modern-day halacha laws of Nida, because a lot has been implemented Chachamim to simplify due to the complexity with the laws of Nida and particularly Zava. So to explain, if a woman sees blood, it means has a period, in a regular time, she is a Nida. She has to wait 7 days, and she even if she sees blood in the intervening time, she's still a Nida, and after 7 days, if she stops seeing blood, she can immerse in a mikveh and she's Tahor. However, if in the 11-day period after those 7 days, she sees blood, she could be called a Zava. If she sees blood one day, then she can simply, if the next day she immerses in a mikvah and sees no blood, then she's fine, even 2 days in a row. But if she sees it 3 days in a row, she's now really called a Zava Gdola, or a Zava, no longer at what's the previous state was a Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom, but now she's a Zava, and she would have to keep what's called Shiva Nikiyim. She would have to keep 7 full clean days, meaning not see any blood, and then she would immerse in a mikvah, and that would be, she'd no longer be tameh. It's all important for the laws in Tumah and Tahara. We won't discuss korbanot and other things, just let's simplify with the timing, because that's what this mission is interested in. What's interesting here is, after that 11-day period is up, if she hadn't seen any blood, and she sees blood after that, say on the 12th day, then it's back to the regular program, that's considered as if she's nida once again. And importantly for this Mishnah, if she sees blood on the 10th and 11th day, last 2 days of that Zava period, 2 days in a row, even if she sees it the day after, which is the first day of this Nida period, that wouldn't make her a Zava anymore. She'd be considered a normal Nida. What this mission is dealing with, since it's really important to know exactly what time of the month you're in, first 7 days or last 11 days, what happens if a woman sees blood and she just doesn't know? She doesn't know where she is in the month. That's called a toe, or to'ah, as I should say, because in the feminine tense. Now, what the Mishnah is telling us is that in order for her to get back into the regular schedule, to know that she's definitely a nida, it can be no less than 17 days and no less than 7 days it would take her to really realign. So to explain this, if she saw dung, it means she saw blood only 1 day, then the worst case scenario is that she's a nida. So therefore, she'd have to really finish those 7 days plus another 11 days. So that's 6 plus 11. So after 17 days, if she hasn't seen any blood, she'd know for certain that she is back to her regular cycle. Any blood she sees after that should be a nida. That is the simple scenario. That's no less than 17. What's interesting here, even if she sees 3 days in a row, we still have to be concerned for 17 days. Why is that? That is because the first 2 days could have been the last 2 days that I explained previously from that Zava period, potential Zava period, and the third day could be the first day of her nida cycle. So therefore, she would have to also wait 17 days until we're finished. Now, any more days after that, Kadi goes and lists nearly all the cases, but let's say she saw 9 days in a row. What would that mean? That would mean potentially it could have been the first 2 days with the last 2 days of her Zava period, and then she's seen blood every single day of the Nida period, which means she's got 11 days left now in her Zava time. This is worst case scenario. And then after 11 days, she can be certain now she's returned back to her Nida period. Now, why am I only addressing here that she's potentially these days were in a Nida cycle? That is because if they were in her Zava cycle, then all she'd have to wait is 7 days, as I've explained. So the worst case scenario is if it's 11. I've skipped a few steps here, but as you're seeing, the more blood she sees, the window of time is reducing. That if she no longer sees blood, we can now be certain she's back to a nid again. But it can be no less than 7. Why can't it be less than 7? That is because once she's seen it so many days in a row, it becomes now the worst case scenario is that she's actually a zava. And even if she saw, let's say she saw 16 days in a row, then with certainty she's a Zava because she's definitely seen 3 days in that Yimei Ziva, and she'd have to wait 7 clean days anyway if she was a Zava to return back to that Nida cycle again. Just to make it crystal clear, forget all the complexities of forgetting and not forgetting. If a woman is a Zava, she'd have to keep 7 clean days to become Tahor and then return to her Nida cycle once again, providing, as I explained earlier, that it's earlier on in that Zava period. So that's what the Mishnah says, is no less than 7 and no more than 17. Kadi goes into much more detail, going through all the different scenarios, but I think that is sufficient for us to understand this Mishnah now. And considering the limited time we have together, let's learn the next Mishnah. Ein benagayin pachot mishavu echad velo yata'ar shalosh shavuot. We'll learn this again, just like the previous case. We'd love to learn all the Masechta Negayim to understand this case. But very briefly, the different types of Negayim, meaning tzara'at, which is this spiritual affliction. It's more familiar, it can affect skin, but it can affect clothing and affect houses as well. So the quarantine period, the shortest quarantine period, is a nega that would affect an individual if he's quarantined, meaning it's not confirmed nega, because then he'd have to wait till he's fully healed. But he has this mark that puts him in quarantine. If it was a nega that was on shchin or mikvah, in a boil or on a burn, that's no less than 1. And when it comes to houses, negaim on houses, then the longest quarantine period, in other words, it's a questionable situation whether this is a confirmed nega or not, as opposed to Mitzorah Muskar, Mitzorah Mukhlat, then it's no less than 3 weeks. It's not actually 3 weeks, because the first and last day of each week overlap each other. So it's 3 weeks minus 2 days. Fine, that's the first Mishnah. Let's now learn Mishnah Bet. Mishnah says, Ein pochatim arba chadashim me'ubarim b'shana, ve'lo yeter al shmona. So we know that the lunar month is 29 and a half and a little bit more days. So 29 and a half plus a little bit more is 793 chalakim. Now, when you hear the shul announce how this is Rosh Chodesh and so-and-so chalakim, chalakim is 1,080th of an hour. So a chalak is more than a second. Now, due to that, we find that the Rosh Chodesh of the Rosh Chodashim, if we've discussed this previously, we went back, we learned Masechta Rosh Hashanah, is sometimes the months will be 30 days and sometimes the months will be 29 days. Now, because it's more than 29 and a half, on average, you're going to have more 30-day months than 29-day months. And a Chodesh Me'uberet is a 30-day month, which the Mishnah is referring to here. However, sometimes you might have to actually make it a shorter month due to the various rules that surround when Rosh Chodesh can fall. So that's why in a year you'll have no less than 4 months that are Me'uberet, 30-day months, and no more than 8. Let's continue. Shtei halechem. We learned about this recently back in Pesach Menachot. This is the two loaves there that were brought and the korban on Shavuot with a shnei kivzei atzeret. They are consumed by the kohen in pachot mishnayim v'lo yeter al shalosh. They're consumed in no less than 2 days, meaning because they were baked on Erev Yontov, the second day, if Yontov was chol, meaning a weekday, the second day is when it will be consumed by the Kohanim. V'lo yater, and no more than three. How would you get three? If Erev Yontov was Shabbat, and you couldn't bake them on Erev Yontov, Erev Shavuot, it would have to be baked the day before it, so it would be consumed by the Kohanim on the third day of baking. The Mishnah then continues, similarly, Lechem Apanim, the showbread that was baked on Erev Shabbos, and placed in the Shulchan from Shabbat to Shabbat, and then on the second Shabbat, that's when it was consumed by the Kohanim. It says, Ne'echal, it's consumed in Pachot no less than 9 days. As I explained, Erev Shabbos was baked, then kept from Shabbat to Shabbat, so on the ninth day of baking, and no more than 11. How would you get to 11? Well, if Erev Shabbat was the second day of Rosh Hashanah, so 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, you'd have to bring the baking 2 days earlier, and therefore, doing the maths, it would be consumed the 11th day of baking. Mishnah continues, Katan nimol ein pachot mishmona v'lo yeter al shnemasar. A child that receives is born has its brit milah on time would be no less than 8 days, because as Torah says, you have to give a child brit milah on its 8th day, but no more than 12 days. Now, how is that possible? Meaning, you can have sometimes a situation where the child can get a brit milah on time, but we don't know exactly what on time is, and therefore it cannot override Shabbat Yontov. So, if, for example, it was born on Bein Hashmashot, meaning between sunset and night, then we don't know exactly what on time is. Let's say it was between Monday and Tuesday. You don't know if he's a Monday child or a Tuesday child. So it would have to add another day, meaning the ninth day now, you do the following Tuesday, which is the ninth day from Monday, because you're not sure he's a Monday child or a Tuesday child. Now, if that suffix was Erev Shabbat, you can't simply do it on the ninth day, because again, that might not be his time. And considering that a Brit Milah only overrides Shabbos if it is the right day, then you have to push it off an additional day. Now, if the day that it could fall out is potentially, if we say now your Rosh Hashanah falls on Sunday and Monday, then again, this child was born a Ben Hashmashot Erev Shabbos. You can't do it Friday because he could have been born on Shabbos. You can't do it on Shabbos because it's a suffix, whether that's his day. You can't do it Sunday or Monday because a Brit Milah that's not on time doesn't override Yontov either. So that's why it would, despite the fact this child is healthy and you want to give him a Brit Milah on time, it can only really be done 12 days after it's born. Those are the Mishnah today.